Look to 23. The New Democrats are where you usually find them, around 17%. Michael Ignatius' brief time as leader of the Liberals seems to be very quickly turning into a nightmare. See, if you're thinking about purchasing an RV, trailer, car, or other vehicle, and then bringing it back to Canada, well, before you do it, get all the import information by contacting the Registrar of Imported Vehicles in Toronto. Their website is riv.ca. You can call them toll-free at 1-888-848-8240. And now that the Canadian dollar is well above 90 cents U.S., there's no better time to visit Nassau and Paradise Island in the Bahamas. Just a 35-minute flight from Fort Lauderdale, about an hour from Orlando, with non-stop flights including JetBlue's daily service. Planning your getaway is easy at the Hot Deals section of NassauParadiseIsland.com. And finally, the Canadian Football League will set the stage for the Grey Cup game next weekend with the Eastern and Western finals tomorrow. In the East, British Columbia plays Montreal, if you can figure BC in the East. And Calgary takes on Saskatchewan. This is Canada Calling, and online at CanadaCalling.com. We're back on Monday. Until then, have a good weekend. Pryor Smith speaking from Toronto.
AM 1300 WMEL.
On the Talk to Me station, AM 1300 WMEL, here is your Saturday morning forecast. This morning we'll have lows in the lower 60s with winds out of the north at 5 miles per hour and partly cloudy skies. Later on today we'll have highs in the low 80s with partly cloudy skies and a 20% chance of rain with winds out of the north at 5 miles per hour. You can hear Neil Bortz every weekday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. exclusively on the Talk to Me station, AM 1300 WMEL.
This is Bold Talk Business Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, the CEO of Bold Marketing Solutions, Donna Anselmo.
Good morning. This is Donna Anselmo at Bold Talk Business Radio. And today is another great Saturday morning for us to learn a little bit more about some of the business options that we have available to us. This morning, I have someone on the line who has accomplished some great things for small businesses as a business consultant. So how about this as an example? In one small company, our guest today, whose name is Stacy Luft, introduced and established some goal setting and accountability procedures that saved a company $500,000 in annual payroll costs. Another one of her accomplishments was improving cash flow by renegotiating contract terms with vendors, which reduced hands-on inventory quantities and established purchasing standards for inventory and overheads. In another cash-strapped company, Stacy uncovered unanticipated available cash through collection of over $210,000 of 30-day plus 90-day plus count receivables. So Stacy has been able to bring some high value to companies by putting a focus on the financial aspect of the business. Stacy is a CFO at a company in New York called IDS Menus, and she's also president of an emerging company now called CF Grow. Stacy, thanks for being on the line with us this morning.
Good morning. My pleasure.
Stacy, tell us a little bit about what you do when you go into a company. I know there are companies that are typically smaller companies, don't necessarily have a CEO, a CFO, chief financial officer on hand. And so they look to very often maybe their accountant for some financial expertise. Tell us what it's like to bring a chief financial officer into your company on a consulting basis versus talking with a bookkeeper or an accountant. Where's the difference lie?
The difference with a chief financial officer that you'll find over an accountant is a chief financial officer will not only look at your income statement and your balance sheet and your tax return, but they'll also look at your banking relationship or your accounting staff that's in-house or your operating procedures to see if things are running smoothly, to see if the right things are getting done at the right times. Often an accountant, you'll talk to them, especially in small business, maybe you'll talk to them once a year while you're doing your taxes. But a CFO, especially on a consulting basis for a small business, they can help you through your operations as they come up.
What are you seeing going on in the market now? What are some of the biggest concerns financially that your customers are having and that you're seeing as trends in the marketplace now?
The biggest concerns I'm seeing from business owners are budgeting and forecasting, where they're not sure how to plan for next year, because this year has been so different than what they're used to. So they're really uncomfortable in certain areas of knowing really what their trends in the marketplace are going to be.
So when people are not sure about the trends, it's because the predictability has changed?
Yes.
Can you expand on that a little bit, Stacy?
Sure. In the past, typically, industry, we would look at a year, we would look at year over year, we would look at the prior 3 years and create trends off of that. And this last year has basically thrown off all those trending charts. So it's become difficult to do year over year, because year over year is so drastically different. So you don't want to overestimate for the upcoming year and come up short, and or underestimate and not be ready for the business.
So
it's really a balancing act.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of things being so different, what's actually different about it? How are people treating their money now?
People are really holding on to their money a lot longer than they used to. They're really thinking about what they're purchasing and whether or not they should spend those dollars on that particular product or another product. So they're really researching and really looking into companies and looking into the product and getting all their facts first. So the sales cycle is a lot longer.
And when your sales cycle is a lot longer, I guess that means that it takes more time until your deposits come in.
Correct.
Even if you make the sale, because some people, I assume, are, and I don't know the statistics, Stacy. I don't know if there are statistics out there that are telling us how much longer it's taking people to make a sale, or whether people are closing business on a percentage basis across a trend in a different way. Are you familiar with any statistics on that?
Not a general statistic. My experience has been very focused on the particular company that I'm in and the particular industry that I'm working with at the time. I can tell you that one of the companies in New York that I've been working with, their typical sales cycle was a 4 to 6 week sales cycle from the time they spoke to the client to the time that they actually closed the sale. Now they're experiencing that has been stretched to 6 to 8, possibly 10 weeks. So it's specific to their industry. It really depends on your client and really knowing what your business model typically is.
So what are some things that business owners can do from a process standpoint to make the adjustment when cash flows is slower, when the sales cycles are longer? What are some things that business owners can do in managing their own cash flow or looking at their business and adjusting things from a financial perspective?
Well, when things start to slow down, you really want to tighten up on how you're actually spending your own money and make sure that you're doing the things you need to do and trying to be more efficient and effective with your time, really being focused on the things that you know are going to generate cash and not spend so much time on the things that may not generate cash. And just knowing your mission, knowing what your product is, and just staying focused and not getting distracted.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the hidden opportunities that people may be missing in their cash control.
Some of the hidden opportunities are if you are an inventory-based business, having too much stock on hand. If you're purchasing inventory for possible sales for tomorrow, that's cash that's sitting on your shelf that's not making you money. Partnering with vendors that you can rely on and suppliers that you understand their supply chain, and moving more towards a just-in-time inventory where you're having on hand what you need when you need it, is an opportunity to free up cash that's not sitting on the shelf and possibly in a money market making you money or in an interest-bearing account making you money.
You mentioned vendors. Let's mm-hmm. talk a little bit about vendor relationships. What can small business owners do in negotiating or possibly renegotiating with vendors, or how can they keep a really good vendor relationship that works in a win-win way for the vendor and for the company?
Communication, really speaking with your vendors, having a business conversation about what works for both of you. What are some of the concerns that you have? What are the concerns that the vendor may have? And what is the real middle ground for both of you that will work? And just communication.
I worked with a company years ago and was working with them to put together their sales process guide. And in the process guide, I remember that one of the things that we did was we put together a list of the five things that we commit to doing for you, which this was the vendor going in and committing to that for their client, and then asking for five particular things in return. So this particular company was a staffing company, so they said, well, we will give you quick service, but we're asking you to give us honest urgency assessment. Don't call us, and tell us you have to have this person tomorrow and then take 10 days to make a decision.
Right.
Another thing that they asked for was if we will give you a preferred rate, but then we would like a quicker payment term.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really good because they outlined those things right at the start with their clients. Talk to me a little bit about payment terms and what's happening in the market out there now.
What's happening in the market is credit, as we know, has dried up. And what I've been finding with vendors is that vendors that were typically comfortable with giving longer terms, say a net 45-day or a net 60-day, are tightening up their terms. If they can't renegotiate with their client to change from net 45 to net 30, instead of calling on day 50 or day 60, they're calling on day 45. The money was due today. Or they may be calling on day 40 saying, is my payment scheduled in a timely manner? And they're really upping the collection time. And not taking it from a collection standpoint of demanding of payment, but having conversations about what's going on in each particular company. How is it working for you? Are you on time this month? Are you falling behind? So they're getting information to know how to plan their cash flow.
So if I don't want to create a problem in the relationship with my client, but I want to get paid in a timely way, how would you suggest broaching that conversation?
When I'm calling a client for payment, I always approach it from the position of information gathering. I'll call them up and I will say to them, I have an open invoice on the account, and I was just calling to see what the status is of the payment. Do you have that invoice? Has it been approved? Is it ready for processing? Do you know when that check will be cut? And really, just information gathering.
Okay.
And keeping in mind that person may have had 30 other people that called before me, asking the similar questions and maybe not asking it quite so nicely, and just really trying to stay focused on the person that I'm speaking to and putting myself in their shoes.
What is the best approach to negotiating or renegotiating a vendor contract?
The best approach is to first know what your limitations are, know what you need to get from that vendor, know what your deal breakers are, and then what areas of interest that you have that you can move on. And then be honest with your vendors. Go to your vendors and say, these are my most important things that I need to accomplish. And these are the areas in which I have some concerns and some issues that I need to address, and take it from there and see what the vendor says. And the vendor should be coming to you with the same things. These are my sticking points. I'm strict on payment terms. I must have payment on 30 days. And know, if you commit to that you can deliver.
What can we do as a business owner, or as business owners, to increase our buying power when our budgets are so stretched because we are, maybe payment to us is less timely than it used to be, where our cash flow is tighter? What are some things that we can do to increase our buying power?
Communication.
We're back to communication. All right, well, you know, there are some things that work. Okay, tell us why.
Talking to your vendors, some of the vendors that I work with one company, they're the major suppliers. They need a constant flow of the product, but obviously the collections are not matching up with the payables because the collections are taking longer than the payables are coming due. And what I've done with these vendors is come up with weekly payment arrangements that they're comfortable with, that the company is comfortable with, and sticking to that agreement and just keeping the cash flowing to them, and they're keeping the products flowing to this company. Now, these are also vendors that the vendor and the company have long-standing relationships with, so they're very comfortable knowing that this company always does what they say they're going to do.
So, you know, integrity steps up to the plate here, too, being able to demonstrate reliability that you say what you're going to do really actually then becomes a business strategy, which is kind of an interesting thing. It's not just a value that sits out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Let's talk a little bit about credit.
Credit
is an issue today. So many companies that were good payers in the past and, you know, never intended to be late with a bill, never historically were late paying bills, they can be late today because their own cash flow is interrupted. So that affects or can affect their credit standing. Can you talk a little bit about the role that credit plays and how we can adjust for it, what we can do to influence our credit standing today?
Really understanding your credit report. Much like an individual will have a FICO score, a business has a D&B rating.
Okay, explain what a FICO score is for people.
A FICO score is your credit rating, your personal credit rating, based on how you pay your bills, how much credit debt you have outstanding, your mortgage, how many credit cards you have with different stores, and the available credit line that you could charge at any given time, and how well you pay your bill. And it's weighted, and it depends on the individual, and it's a score from, I think it's from 0 to 1,000. The 700 to 800s are typically considered good credit. 600 to 500s are considered bad credit.
Okay, so that's personal. So now we're on to business.
Now on a business, they're in the same sense, D&B will rate a company. Dun & Bradstreet. And they rate companies based on all the different areas, how well they pay their bill, how much credit do they have outstanding, how many bank loans do they have secured debt, unsecured debt, and they have trade payments that will report in, different vendors that will report into D&B to let D&B know how well you pay your bills. Really understanding your credit report and what vendors will report in, what things will affect your D&B. Leaving a open note on your credit report that has been closed for years can have a negative effect on your credit report. So cleaning that up can increase your credit rating. A lot of companies, especially in the small business sector, will rely on Dun & Bradstreet to decide whether or not they should extend you credit. So keeping your credit report clean with D&B can help you gain credit from a new vendor that doesn't know you yet and doesn't have that integrity experience with you yet.
Okay, so and people can call D&B and check on their on their credit rating with them.
Yes, okay. You could go online. You could pay. They have a paid service that you can use to check out your customers, and then you can also keep track of your own credit report.
Excuse me. It's live radio here. Let's talk a little bit about, you've got your credit under control. You need to account for your money somehow. Which accounting platforms are really good for companies to use to streamline their efficiency and make sure that they're saving money and tracking appropriately and forecasting? Let's talk also, move into forecasting a little bit.
Sure. Accounting software is really specific to the type of needs of the business. A small business is not going to need a large mainframe system that is overly complicated and has too many steps in it. But, you know, a small business may be able to use a software package like a QuickBooks or a Microsoft accounting software package. It really depends on the individual company. And when I go into a company and I ask them about their accounting system, the first thing I ask them is, what is the information you need? And what other information would you like to have? And that starts to drive what type of package they should start looking at. And also, obviously, the budget of how much software they should purchase, because it can get quite expensive. And it's not always necessary. For forecasting, I just use Excel. And most of my peers use Excel. Some of them use different software packages that I'm not familiar with. But for the most part, we're all in Excel, exporting our data and using the spreadsheets that we've developed over time.
Okay, now somebody, for instance, in manufacturing might be using a program like Great Plains where they can manage inventory, but for the typical small business owner, you're saying Excel is a really perfect solution.
Excel would be a perfect solution for your forecasting, for your invoicing, and for your accounts payable. You would need a software package like a QuickBooks or like a Microsoft accounting software package.
Okay, we're talking now on Bold Talk Business Radio with Stacy Luft as our guest. Stacy brings corporate success to small businesses. She's a successful financial and operations executive with a proven track record for maximizing productivity, cost efficiency, and scalable growth in companies that are ready to emerge to the next level. This is Donna Anselmo at WMELAM 1300, the Talk to Me station. So, Stacy, hang with us. We've got a few minutes left, probably 4 minutes maybe.
Sure.
And so I want to talk a little bit about what people can do to turn around a plummeting bottom line and stay on track for success.
They have to roll up their sleeves, do the dirty work, make the hard decisions, look at where that money is going and why are your sales why is your bottom line plummeting? Is it because you don't have enough sales to support the expenses that you have, the overheads, the staff, or is it because you've been discounting too deeply trying to grab that sale and ruining your margins and giving away your profits to your customers? You really need to be focused on what's happening in your business, when it's happening, and watching those dollars and not getting going into panic mode of, oh my goodness, I'm losing all this money. Really staying calm and taking a look at it and doing the dirty work.
Stacy, you mentioned the word sales, which made me think about commissions.
Mm-hmm.
What should people be thinking about when they are formulating commission structures for sales teams today? I know people are juggling and they're changing their payment structures like crazy today. What do you recommend?
When I'm looking at writing a commission plan, I like to write a commission plan that encourages the types of sales that is best for the business. So I generally will write a commission plan that's weighted based on the type of sales that the company wants to get. So if the company is looking for volume in transactions, I might write a program that will reward a salesperson for number of transactions. If a company is looking for a particular type of client, then I will write a program that is weighted rewarding that salesperson on getting that type of client that you're looking for. Plans are really the behaviors. The commission plan you write will drive the behavior that the salesperson does, because they're going to figure out how they make the most money. Okay. And that's what they're going to sell.
So can you put together a combination commission plan? You get so much for this and so much for that?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Obviously, the more complicated the plan, the more tracking is involved. So you really need to also weigh that with, do you want to spend your entire time calculating commissions or doing other things? So it's always a balancing act. Whatever decisions you make, you want to look at the pros and the cons.
Stacy, we're almost out of time here, so why don't you let people know how to get in touch with you if they have a question?
Sure. The best way to reach me would be to send me an email at stacyluft@gmail.com. That's STACYLUF as in Frank, T as in Tom, @gmail.com, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you very much, Stacy. We'll be in touch with you in the future. Hope you'll come back and be with us again on Bold Talk Business Radio. Stacy Luft from CF Grow. Thank you.
Sandy, good morning to you. This is David James, publisher of The Perfect Wedding Guide. Once again, you've entered the wedding zone. Every Saturday morning from 9:30 to 10, we discuss weddings and everything bridal related. Are you getting married? Maybe you know someone who is, perhaps.